The steep drop in the price of oil over the last 2 years means the state has lost hundreds of high-paying oil and gas jobs with economic impacts that ripple throughout the economy. From industry support service jobs to engineering firms and even the local coffee shop, further job losses are not only possible, they are likely. How are Alaskans dealing with these cuts, and how much might industry job loss affect the broader economy in the state? That's our discussion today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Do you know an oil and gas worker who is out of a job? The state has lost more than 2,000 industry jobs in the last year and is now in its first real recession in three decades. We're taking a look at what that means for employment in the state and for the broader economy in a series on APRN this week called An Uncertain Future. The series was produced by Alaska's Energy Desk, a new reporting team that's a collaboration between KTOO, KUCB, and Alaska Public Media. Joining me from Alaska's Energy Desk is reporter Rachel Waldholtz. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Lori. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being on. And we also have economist Neil Fried. Neil is an economist with the state of Alaska. He's also in the studio with us. Hi, Neil.
Good morning, Rachel and Lori. It's great to be here.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that Neil is also a board member of Alaska Public Media. But that doesn't mean we're going to ask any less hard questions. We also want to hear from you. Do you have an Alaska recession story? Have you lost your job? Are you worried about losing your job? Or are you feeling pretty secure in your employment? You can give us a call, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Neil, we said at the beginning that the state has lost more than 2,000 oil and gas jobs, but we've gained jobs in other sectors. So put the loss into context for us. How significant is this overall?
It's pretty significant. I mean, you know, those job losses that are related to the oil sector have been great enough. And they're not just coming out of the oil industry. Like you said, they're coming out maybe some coffee shops and other broader service sectors that directly employ people in the oil industry, that by the end of last year, our overall total employment numbers turned negative. In other words, by the last quarter of 2015, there were fewer jobs, total jobs in Alaska than there were previous year for that period. So it wasn't just the oil industry losing jobs, but there are a number of sectors that are losing jobs, and they added up to be larger than those that were still seeing gains.
And that is a change in what we had been seeing. For how many years had we been adding jobs?
You know, it's been sort of an amazing run in Alaska. You know, we really have gained jobs almost every year since 1988. I don't know if there's another state in the country, and if there are, it's just a handful that can say that. We did have a slight job loss in 2009 that was kind of tied to that national Great Recession, but we bounced out of that really quickly, and I don't know if you'd even call that a recession. For certain industries, it was. So it's been an amazing run. So in that sense, it is different.
How many jobs overall has the state lost total in the economy in the last couple of years?
Well, you know, if we looked at 2015, we we were still slightly positive in 2015 when we look at it from an annual standpoint. Some communities like Anchorage were not. They were slightly negative. But 2016, there's little doubt that we're going to end up with fewer jobs this year than last year, because it really didn't start, the total job loss didn't really start manifesting itself till the end of last year. In fact, even our oil job losses took a lot longer to happen than a lot of other places in the country.
And so, go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, and I was just going to say, you know, to put some numbers on that, I mean, I know that these are estimates, but it's what? It's something like 2,000 jobs lost in oil and gas since this time last year. It's something like 1,000 jobs lost in construction, other related industries, I guess professional and business services, which what does that include? That's another 1,000 jobs lost.
Yeah, and the big job losses in there, that's a real broad category, but are tied to like engineering, those kinds of environmental services, those industries that are directly, you know, supporting oil and gas activity. The other big job loss and negative out there is state government. That mm-hmm. also is down by over 1,000.
Which, of course, is related to the drop-off in oil revenue. And so, you know, there are increases in things like healthcare and retail, but they haven't offset the job losses in oil and gas and in those related industries.
So the state is in recession for the first time in three decades. How do we know? What does that mean? What does that look like from an economist's stand?
Well, and you know, how do we define a recession?
Right.
You know, you ask different people, and we've written a recent article about that. How do we define a recession? And really, you can define it in many different ways. The way we basically defined it is if you have three quarters of employment losses, you know, compared to the previous period. And it certainly looks like we're coming up to that three quarters very, very soon. You know, we're not quite there, but that might be more academic than anything. There are certainly lots of people that believe we're there. There were people 9 months ago that said we were there.
I know that we had started hearing the word recession last year. And so
The R word.
I know. Yeah, I was going
exactly.
to say the very thing. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing the state's oil and gas recession. My guests are Rachel Waldholtz, who is part of our Alaska Energy Desk team that's reporting on all things energy and environment. It's a collaboration with KTOO and KUCB. And also Neil Fried, who is a state economist, not just a labor economist. I've just got to cross that off my paper.
Well, we used to be labor economists.
And you can join our conversation if you would like to. If you know of someone who's lost a job in the oil and gas sector, or maybe you have, or you're feeling vulnerable, or maybe you're feeling just fine and your job is secure, please give us a call, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, or in Anchorage, 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go to the phones for just a moment. Jed is in Anchorage. Hi, Jed.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to contribute to the dialogue. The price of a barrel of oil is a simple economics of supply and demand. And the volatility of the price of oil, there are too many variables to accurately predict. You can get a ballpark range. I myself predicted in a letter to the editor last year that the price of oil would be somewhere between $60 and $70 a barrel this year. But getting back to the supply and demand, in the year 2000, there were 6 billion people on the planet. Okay? In the year 2010, there are 7 billion people on the planet. According to the British Petroleum Annual Report, which I recommend people get a copy and read, okay, British Petroleum predicts that the world population by the year 2025, just a short 9 years from now, will be 7.5 billion people. Now, 1.5 billion people more means more people need more energy, more health care, more consumer goods, more construction materials, material demand for everything. So in the classical sense of setting the price of a barrel of oil by supply and demand, okay? Demand is out there for this oil. In the long run, hydrocarbons are going to go away because it'll be displaced by a safer carbon neutral or global warming neutral energy source. However, in the short term, there's still going to be a demand for oil.
And yep, I think you're right about that, Jed.
The current price of oil and the fear that people have in the Alaskan economy for the recession, so-called recession, people getting laid off, this is just a bump in the road. And that's what I would say to folks, and I would be very interested to hear what Mr. Fried has to say in response.
Mr. Fried, yes. Thank you, Jed, for that, your thoughts on the price of oil and gas. I think what he meant was he suspects that the price will go back up. Neil, your thoughts?
No, I mean, I think in some ways Jed is completely right. I mean, we don't know what the future holds, but, you know, demand, I mean, we have seen this happen before. World population is growing. I'm sure demand will go, but there's the other side of it's the supply, and we know that's increased as well. But, you know, a lot of people in this BP report he was talking about, they are predicting that $50, $60 barrel oil this year. We've already seen some increases. So, yeah, there's real fundamentals out there. But, you know, they can also change very quickly. And that's what we saw, you know, in this recent. I hope it's just a bump in the road. That would be great.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of state lawmakers and a lot of executives at oil companies hoping that Jed is exactly right.
Rachel, you talked to several oil and gas workers for the series that is getting pushed out just this week from Alaska's Energy Desk. Describe some of what you heard from these folks.
Yeah, well, one of the things we heard actually was just sort of the agony of uncertainty right now. You know, people have seen the price of oil drop. They've seen work dry up. In some cases, they've seen a couple rounds of layoffs. And so we talked to a couple people who said by the time they were laid off, it was almost a relief just to sort of know at least sort of what the future holds at this point. And one person we spoke to was used to be a botanist for ASRC Energy Services, Rachel Mills. She's now a manager at Urban Greens down in downtown Anchorage. And her company was hit pretty hard when Shell pulled out of the Arctic, so it was a combination of that and falling oil prices. And she was laid off in January, and this is a little bit of what she had to say.
The big boss of my department brought us all in and said, hey, I wish we could say this is not going to hurt us or it's not going to affect us, but it's going to. He said, you know, there's a lot of our work that's in, you know, tied up with Shell. And Tuesday, they called me in at Tuesday. Come on, AES, Tuesday? Like, brutal. Anyway, Tuesday they called me in, and that was the day that I was laid off, was Tuesday, and it wasn't totally shocking, and honestly it was more of a relief at that point because you'd been waiting and you knew the score, you knew kind of who was kind of next in line at that point. And so it was really a relief, and there wasn't any negativity. They were very kind. They said that there just wasn't any work. Hey, there's no work.
Rachel, she kind of put a positive spin on, okay, there's no work. But you mentioned that she's managing a store in downtown Anchorage now. Do you intend to go back to some of the folks that you've talked to in the coming months and see how they're doing, how their current jobs compare to maybe what they've lost, or what's the thought there?
We certainly could. That's a good idea. I went and visited Rachel down at, she's the manager at Urban Greens, which is sort of the sandwich shop in downtown Anchorage. And I went and visited her there. And she, she was very clear that her big concern when she got laid off was that she just wanted to stay in Alaska. And she had some friends who, maybe are considering, leaving the state. You know, one of her issues was she's a botanist. She was a botanist at ASRC, which, contracts with oil and gas companies, does a lot of permitting work for them. And if you're a botanist, there aren't a ton of other jobs out there. Mm. One of the other options was the state, and the state hiring freeze went into effect the same month she was laid off. So for her, it was sort of like, what are the options out there? And when her husband knew about a sandwich shop that needed a manager and also had a hydroponics operation, they grow their own like lettuce and basil, so it was sort of related to botany, and she just sort of jumped at it, even though it's a major pay cut doesn't have benefits and health care. So for her, it was just sort of a big career switch with the goal of just sort of keeping her life in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. This is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing the loss of oil and gas industry jobs. And we're also launching a new series of stories by Alaska's Energy Desk, a new collaborative energy and environment team that's the work of Alaska Public Media, Station KTOO in Juneau, and Station KUCB in Unalaska. But certainly the stories will be around the state. And you can find those stories on Facebook. Find Alaska's Energy Desk page on Facebook and check those out. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. John is in Fairbanks. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm sort of recall us giving the oil companies $4 billion tax break and jobs. And the jobs are on the North Slope now. 80% of the people up there are from outside. So I guess the only thing left to do is raise taxes on them. Just give Alaska our fair share, the same amount that other people, you know, the other states receive from the offshore oil. We tried giving them the tax breaks. We tried things. You know, just give us our fair share. Just give us the money, the tax revenue, like all the other states get from offshore. You know, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right, thanks, John. Neil, John cited the vast majority of people working on the slope are from out of state. What's known about those numbers? Do you track that?
Yeah, we do track the residency, not necessarily specifically on the North Slope, and we do some of that. But we do look at industries and look at the number of non-residents. So we can do that in Alaska because of the PFD. They probably couldn't do that anywhere else. And we did see an increase in the number of non-residents over the last decade. And the latest numbers we have, which just came out in January of this year, for non-residents in the oil sector were the highest it had ever been. They were at 35%. So it's a significant number. And if you went to and that's for the whole oil industry, whether it's in Anchorage, the Slope, Kenai, or somewhere else. So certainly if you looked at the North Slope, that percentage is probably higher, probably closer to 40, maybe even 45%. So there is a significant percent of the workforce that are non-residents, that, you know, when they're done with their shift, they go somewhere else.
But let's be clear about it. It's not 85%.
No.
It's less than half.
Yes.
All right. Despite the recent layoffs, oil employment in Alaska is at a historic high. So what explains that?
Well, you know, it's sort of been a very bizarre story. And if you read, you know, articles written in like 2005 or 6, you know, most people are basically predicting a long-term stagnation at best for oil industry employment. A lot of it was because, you know, we just had seen a long period of losses or no growth in the sector. And, of course, production was falling. And then, miraculously, and we saw some strong growth beginning in 2006. I think by 2007, we had a record number of people ever working on the North Slope. And no one predicted that was going to happen. And it happened for, I think, a number of reasons. What sort of got it started was our big pipeline leak in 2006 when the pipeline sprung a big leak. And they did a lot of corrosion work and they had to invest a lot of new money, not just where the leak was, but all along the pipeline. And then prices started to rise and rise dramatically. And a lot of new projects were coming on. You know, and we're not working on Prudhoe Bay. I mean, we are working on Prudhoe Bay, but these fields take more effort. And part of that effort is more workforce. You know, they're not as efficient as they used to be. Prudhoe Bay is an unbelievably efficient field, so it just takes more money and capital investment and people. And, you know, after 2007, every year we hit a new all-time record. And, you know, we ended last year at over 14,000, which was a record. And, you know, the numbers are still at record highs, but we're certainly losing ground. I don't know when they're going to fall below that previous record of 2007, but that might happen eventually. So yeah, those numbers, I mean, it's you know, when you're looking at those numbers like in Prudhoe Bay and you're looking at twice as many people working up there than a decade ago, if I had said that was going to happen in 2005, no one would have believed me. I wouldn't believe myself.
So what does that mean about the other side of that then? If we're at historic highs, how bad is the fall going to be?
And that's a really good question. I mean, that does, you know, it certainly makes me somewhat nervous because it got as high as it is, could have fallen much harder. And that question is I don't think, answerable yet. You know, a lot of it's going to be tied to the price of oil.
Mm-hmm. And just where we are now, so we reached a peak of something around 14,000 people working directly in oil and gas last year, in 2014.
Right.
And so now we're down about, what, like 12,000 people?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Tim is in Skagway. Hi, Tim. Tim is in Skagway, but he's not on the phone. All right, let's try Joseph in Anchorage. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak to this very important subject. I worked with Roger Cremo some years ago as he would go to the legislature and predict that whether or not the price of oil fluctuated, certainly the volume of oil was going to decrease over time. It is a finite resource. I have personal friends and middle management at BP who are telling me about the losses. The situation for Alaska as far as sustainability of jobs, maybe not in the oil in the oil industry, but the situation for the Alaskan economy is a disaster because our legislature has considered the proceeds from the liquidation of our assets as income. And Roger Cremo had put forth the necessity to invest and live within the means of the amount of money that would be generated by investment. I'd like you to speak to that issue. While I'm deeply concerned about the folks who are going to be losing their jobs, I think of overall America, low-priced oil, is good for transportation and some of our industry. High-priced oil is good for our personal pocketbook here in Alaska, and it concerns me that puts up some kind of opposition. Thank you very much for this morning's program. I'll continue to listen off the air.
Thank you, Joseph. There is definitely the crux of the problem. When oil prices are high, it's great for the Alaska pocketbook, but hard on people in rural Alaska also, and everywhere else across the nation. Neil?
But, you know, with almost 20% of our, you know, gross domestic product tied to oil, I mean, we really ultimately, in the broader sense, benefit from those higher prices. You know, it's good for our broader economy. It's good for most residents, you know, for a lot of different reasons. But it certainly, you know, it hurts some disproportionately. And for some industry, it's not good in Alaska. Low oil prices is great for tourism, for example. It's great for the fishing industry. So there are industries that benefit from it. But because it's such a big piece of our economy, what might not be good for much of the rest of the country is definitely good for us.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing the state's oil and gas recession and job losses in the industry. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, that's statewide, or in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us questions or comments, talk@alaskapublic.org. Neil, these jobs pay really well that we're seeing going away. How do they stack up against job opportunities in other industries?
You know, you almost, from an industry standpoint, there's almost no comparison, really. The mining industry gets close to that. But, I mean, when you look at the average earnings, and averages can be somewhat dangerous, but no matter how you look at it, this is, you know, the best paying industry in this state. It pays 2.5 times the overall average. And just to put numbers to that, the average payroll check in the oil industry is about $139,000, and the average check that's cut out there is about $54,000. So it's a whole different world, and that impact is even greater when you look at, you know, about 4% of the folks that are getting paychecks are working directly for the oil industry, but it represents about 11% of all payroll. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a small industry that has a huge financial impact on our labor market and wages in many different ways.
Yeah, a big dollar footprint. Rachel, When you talk to people who have been laid off for this series, how worried are they about finding jobs that come close to matching the income that they have become used to?
Yeah, I don't think it's so much that people are worried they won't find a job that pays the same. They just know that they're not going to find a job that pays the same. When we spoke to folks, I mean, universally across the board, that's what they said is, you know, if they've been laid off or if they're afraid of being laid off, you're just not going to find the same kind of pay. One person we talked to was Brad Campbell, who was just laid off at BP after 15 years. He has been a financial analyst there. And talking to him, he said, you know, realistically, he can expect to make maybe 70 or 80% of what he was making at BP, which is pretty good, but it's, you know, it's not the same. Here's some of what he had to say.
200 positions were eliminated. They had to look at a lot of different people and just see where the best fit was. And so when, you know, they actually told me that, you know, unfortunately, we don't have a place for you in the new organization, it was disappointing. I felt a little blow to my ego, but I understood why it's going on. I mean, this company is a for-profit based company that has to answer to its shareholders. So I'm going to have to make some changes in my personal life. I'm going to have to make some changes at home. I'm going to do everything possible to keep my home.
And Brad's been here for 33 years.
Yeah, he came here in the early 80s. And worked for the Alaska Railroad and then switched into oil and gas. And he talked about the reason he went into oil and gas, you know, aside from sort of wanting to work in the industry. He talked about, like, enjoying putting energy on the market. But he said part of it was that he wanted to build up a really solid retirement, that is the industry you go into to make really good money.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones just for a moment. Donna is in Homer. Hi, Donna.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the program. Yeah, I don't know that I have a question as much as I want to bring another aspect to this. I've worked in the nonprofit sector. I've been in Homer for 32 years, and the last 10 I just spent working for our local domestic violence and sexual assault agency, where we work with families and victims. And my job was terminated after that period of time due to budget cuts. I just think that we need to look at the bigger piece. It's not just people in the oil and gas industry that are impacted by the budget shortfalls and our dependence on oil. I know there's a lot of money to be made in this industry, but when we're tied this way and we rely on it for our services, the services that are needed don't just go away because we can't afford to pay for them. And the ripple effects on, you know, what I saw happening with the court systems and what they can and can't bring to trial, even after a rape victim is willing and able to go to trial, which is a horrendous experience for that person. And then to have the, you know, the courts say, you know, we're not taking this, it's too expensive, we don't have the funds to bring this to trial, we have to pick and choose. So I just want to bring a larger impact to the discussion, because it affects the state on a huge level when we are so dependent. And I firmly believe we should be taxing the people who make these huge incomes by working in the industry, and then they don't even live here. So I just want to bring that perspective, and I'd be curious to see if you have any thoughts on that as we move forward.
All right. Well, thank you, Donna. That's an important point, the larger impact, the ripple effect on the broader economy from these job losses and what that means, the kind of the cooling effect of other employment. We're going to be talking about that aspect of this important discussion after we take a quick break as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the state's oil and gas recession, job loss in the industry. We just heard from Donna in Homer talking about reminding us that there are other impacts beyond just the oil and gas sector. Neil, in our interview, or in the interview that Rachel set up for us with Brad, he talked about how he may have to leave Alaska to find another job. Are we seeing evidence of that in the numbers yet? Are more people leaving the state?
You know, we're not really seeing numbers evident to that yet, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. But we've already had 2 years of negative out-migration, maybe even three. In other words, more people during at least the last 2 years, and it's possibly three, I can't remember, more people actually were leaving Alaska and moving in. And part of that was, and most of that was tied to the huge recovery in the national economy, because in the previous period, of course, we saw just the opposite. With the terrible economy in the lower 48, meant more people were coming to Alaska, and also meant more people were staying here that might have otherwise left, because, you know, in 2013, you would have been sitting around Alaska saying, oh, maybe I'm going to go to California to find a job. So that changed. So yes, I mean, I think we're probably already seeing that. When we have the 2016 numbers, the population numbers only come out once a year. You know, I am sure part of that effect will be certainly tied to our economy. I mean, the national economy is doing really very well right now and is quite attractive. The West Coast is quite attractive, and their job markets are much healthier than ours. So yes, I mean, I have little doubt that that is happening. We just don't know to what extent.
What about other industries during this recession? What other sectors are losing employment right now?
Well, you know, Rachel was talking about some of that. You know, professional and business services, one, state government, of course, that's the oil side of the story, which is as big or maybe even bigger than the actual oil industry side of the story when it comes to numbers. Construction, we think that's sort of tied to the oil revenue side to some extent, because we've been seeing much smaller capital budgets. But also, they were a big player in the construction industry. There's a lot of construction going on the Kenai Peninsula and North Slope, and even Anchorage is tied to the oil industry. So that is manifesting itself as well. And there, you know, by now there may be other, you know, even though we may have some sectors that are still growing, whether it's in leisure and hospitality or retail or some other
healthcare sectors.
Right. They would have maybe even growing faster if it hadn't been for this, loss of jobs, or the outlook, you know, when people are looking and saying, well, you know, should I expand, should I not expand? And that, of course, is very difficult to measure, but we know it's real.
There was some information just recently about a pretty big spike in the healthcare industry with job increases. What do we know about that?
You know, that healthcare, I mean, one thing we can pretty much say is healthcare is just one of those industries that's our perennial grower. They just grow every year. They've been growing every year since 19, you know, they've been growing for over 30 years. It's just, and it's hard to, you know, think of declines in that industry because of our demographics. We're aging pretty fast, and the older population uses healthcare a lot more. So, you know, some years it grows a lot, some years it grows a little. Why it grew a lot, you know, maybe the Medicare expansion had some effect on that, but it who knows?
Well, let's go back to the phones, if I can get my screen to come back here. Jeremy is in Anchorage. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi.
Did you have a question?
A question for Neil. So I was wondering, you mentioned sort of peak employment on the North Slope was mid-2000s, and volumes have been dropping since the late 1980s. So I was wondering, did anyone in the state or in the economics world look at sort of the margin that these companies were making was going away as the volumes were dropping, costs were going up, fields getting older, but employment was still rising? So I guess my question was, you know, was there sort of a stress test run on prices? Maybe this could have been a little predictable as far as that goes, because, you know, at these prices, I'm sure the margin is near zero, especially after taxes. So that was just a question for Neil, being a labor economist.
No, we didn't look at that. I mean, we knew that this may not last. We knew that $100 oil was was, even from a historical standpoint, if you adjust that for inflation, we were hitting record highs for a number of years, which was sort of amazing because some of it was actually during the Great Recession, which was even more unusual because demand, although China's demand continued to grow. But, you know, we knew that there was, you know, this, because we've seen it before, that this is not likely to continue, especially when we saw more and more production coming online. But looking, you know, running stress tests or looking at the margins, no, we sort of look at the labor market side of this industry, you know, not the sort of the profit side, although that certainly influences the labor side.
All right. What is the impact on municipalities around the state when high-paying jobs are lost? A large percentage of oil workers live in the Mattsu Valley, for example, even though there aren't any oil and gas jobs located there. They live there and commute. How does this impact the various municipalities around the state?
We don't really know what the answer to that is yet. You know, we can sort of speculate because it's not completely evident yet. And I think the Mattsu Valley is a great example that there's a workforce that has basically tripled in the last decade, where people that live there, you know, 8 to 9% of those folks work on the North Slope, which is sort of amazing. And it has tripled, and their numbers have tripled. You know, what it ultimately will mean is that the Mattsu area, which has been the fastest growing area of the state, their labor market has expanded all the way through 2015, even during the last quarter. You know, it's likely to slow down. You know, job opportunities are going to become more scarce. It'll be interesting to see. You know, they don't collect income taxes in these boroughs or census areas, so we won't see that part of it. But, you know, we could certainly see a slowing down in their economies, and that could affect property taxes and other things. And of course, we are beginning to see the impact of lower oil revenues, but that's a different story.
Well, and my Rachel. Question is, you know, you mentioned the Mattsu, but where are the other places where we can expect to see these effects sort of concentrated? I mean, where do you see the largest percentage of people who are working in oil and gas?
Yeah, I mean, when we look at specifically just the oil and gas industry and forget about the sort of the revenue story, because that's felt everywhere, obviously, you know, the real concentrations are the Kenai Peninsula. You know, they have, you know, well, let's just start at the top. The North Slope has the largest workforce. Of course, most of those folks live somewhere else, either in the state or elsewhere in the country. The second largest workforce is here in Anchorage directly. The third is the Kenai Peninsula. But as far as the number of people that are working in the industry, the Mattsu is a big player in that. Fairbanks is a pretty big player. But it's really, you know, felt throughout the state. I mean, there are lots of small communities where a couple of workers work on the North Slope, you know, communities that may have 200 or 300 people. So, you know, it will be felt definitely all throughout the state, but there's certainly places of concentration.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Alaska's oil and gas employment sector, the recession that's happening right now in Alaska. And we're also discussing our new series, An Uncertain Future. This is produced from Alaska's Energy Desk, which is a new reporting team based at Alaska Public Media, KTOO in Juneau, and KUCB in Unalaska. For more on the series, including the videos with the workers that we're hearing from today, you can go to alaskapublic.org or ktoo.org. You can also find Alaska's Energy Desk on Facebook. Neil, before this downturn, there was a shortage of oil workers, and that provided opportunity for younger or inexperienced people to come in. Explain that.
Yeah, this was sort of another thing that people didn't, you know, really predict, that when we looked out 10 years, and we do that sometimes with occupational forecasts, that there were going to be all these wonderful opportunities in our oil sector. But that's exactly what happened. And it was a very different period than the previous decade. The previous decade was lots of stagnation. If you had a job in the oil sector, you held on to it for dear life. There wasn't a lot of new players in the industry. If you were young and you wanted to break into that industry, it was really, really hard. And then we saw this beginning uptick, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago, and then very strong growth. And it was happening all over, not just in Alaska. It was happening all over. So there was a shortage of workers. So a lot of these employers were willing to bring on new workers who some of them had skills that were very specific to what they needed, or they felt these workers could learn the skills they needed. So it really provided this incredible entree for new workers to get in an industry that had never had an experience there. So, you know, when you do see that kind of strong growth in a sector, that's often what you see, no matter what industry it is. It's just, it was a very rare thing for Alaska. It happened to happen here since the 80s for the oil sector. And in fact, a study was done by one of our younger economists looking at people, you know, people under the age of 30, the high wage earners for those that are under 30, and almost a third of those jobs, you know, remember, 4% of the jobs are in total jobs are in the oil sector, but almost a third of those jobs that were identified as above average wages or earnings for young people were tied to oil.
Rachel, as part of the series that you've been working on, you talked with one young worker who kind of slipped in the door of an oil services company toward the end of the boom period. Tell us about that. What's her story?
Yeah, so we'll hear in a sec a little clip from Hannah Vupula, who she was coming out of the University of Texas actually in 2015. So oil had already been dropping for a year, and she's an engineer. And she and her fiance were trying to find work in the same place, and they ended up finding work at a contractor up here in Alaska doing automation engineering, so working on systems for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. And she said it sort of felt like a miracle, and she's still employed, and her company has cut hours in an effort to avoid layoffs. But she said it's sort of, you know, so far so good, and fingers crossed. And we have a little clip from her.
Here, our colleagues would talk about like a big PFD and how great it is, you know, and how it's a really big benefit of living in Alaska, and how like slope workers make so much money, and like, this is like the land of milk and honey. Like, you come here, you work hard. This is where you have to be when you're young, you know. You earn, you go back, and then you live whatever life you want. So it's a very, very like bright, exciting future that they were talking about at that time, because that's what it was. But personally, I haven't experienced that yet. It's difficult when you don't know what's going to happen to your job. All these big companies are having major layoffs. We're a small company. We really need work to make our company work.
She sounds quite young. I guess she is quite young, but she's an engineer. What else did you find out in talking with her about? Does she plan to stay in Alaska? Did she talk about that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think she wants to stay here. She's actually originally from India, and so that was sort of another hurdle in finding a job, was that she was sort of afraid it would be harder as an international student. And she talked about her family, you know, when she told her family that she was moving from Texas to Alaska, and they, you know, were imagining polar bears and igloos. and then her father showed up in Anchorage and sort of saw the Starbucks in the Anchorage airport and was like, oh, you're fine. but yeah, you know, she said she didn't expect to end up in Alaska. She didn't expect to end up in oil and gas, but it's been this great opportunity. She said, you know, she's been asked to work on projects she never, you know, never would have, you know, coming in straight out of college, never would have expected to be able to work on the kind of responsibility that she's had. And she wants to stay. She wants to stay in Anchorage. She wants to stay in oil and gas. So, yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Joy is in Sitka. Hi, Joy.
Hi.
Do you have a question or a comment?
I have a comment, and it's not really about oil and gas. It is about the budget, though, and I guess it's kind of a question in that I just for a little background, I was needing some help on an issue, and I went to look up House of Representatives and our Senate members and such to write a letter or a couple. And I was shocked to find out how many politicians we have in Alaska. And just in from my own experiences and my own opinion, I don't think we need that many. And they seem happy to count the natives as far as the population and such, but there aren't a lot of natives that, you know, I've been educated in college down south, so... but I do understand the Alaska side of things. I've grown up in it, and there are few Natives that contact our legislature. There are few Natives that contact our politicians for any help. You know, I remember a lot of the elders when the Katrina stuff was going on, them just wondering why the hell the, why the heck people were just sitting around and waiting for the government to come and save them, you know. And it's happened time and time again with disasters in Alaska. We just kind of roll up our sleeves and do it ourselves. We don't wait for other people to come fix it for us, you know. And we don't need as many politicians as we have. You know, a lot of them are not doing anything for the amount of money that they get from our oil and gas or whatever kind of revenue we pay them with. It just seems like such a waste of money when not many people either know how to or care to use them or contact them.
Okay. Well, thanks, Joy, for those comments. We're talking about labor and employment in the oil and gas industry, but I guess Joy was trying to make the point that maybe we have too many people trying to run things and not enough employed. I'm not quite sure there. Neil, what kind of impacts are we seeing on the broader economy? Is the housing market starting to cool off? Is it in trouble?
You know, that's a good question, you know, that, and that's a question that very often comes to, you know, people's minds nowadays, because I think a lot of people are thinking about the 80s when that was really almost a housing-led recession. I think this period's very different. Not that housing won't necessarily get impacted by this, because I'm sure it will. But when we look at, and we're very numbers-oriented, you know, instead of just, you know, using anecdotes, but when you look at the numbers so far, it's not very clear. The number of houses being sold have not changed very much through this period of the year. What apparently is happening in some cases is inventory has grown. Prices are not going up like they had been for a long time. And there's also some evidence that those houses, those more expensive homes, that market has slowed considerably. Because the other thing we have to remember is interest rates are very low as well right now. You know, so, and that's a big positive for the housing market. And the other thing we have to remember is, you know, that market hasn't been changing very dramatically. We haven't had a lot of new homes built. You know, we don't have a big overhang. It's a very different sort of environment that we're in today than we were in that previous period, or very different than what the country was in when the Great Recession happened the last time.
And what about the rental market? It seems how is that impacted? It has been, especially in Anchorage, a very, very tight rental market. Is that changing now?
Again, the numbers aren't showing anything real specific, but you know, I think there is anecdotal information out there, and it's, when we look at the migration and population numbers, there's little doubt that if it hasn't already been affected, will be affected. I think if you talk to landlords now, many will say that there certainly isn't the number of people calling for that that available place may be smaller than it was, you know, a year ago.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we will talk more about the oil and gas industry in Alaska and the recession that we're experiencing right now, and take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future.
And by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettisworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're going to go to the phones again quickly. Robert is in Homer. Hi, Robert.
Good morning. Thanks for the show. It's very informative. Another issue I'd like to bring up
is what's going on probably in the slope, and I know in Valdez is the shippers are going to contract outside companies that are providing a service at a cheaper price, and I'm more familiar with what's going on in Valdez, and I know that the marine contractor that has been there since the terminal was built is going to be replaced in 2018. And a lot of Alaskans are going to lose their jobs on that one. And apparently the company that's going to come in is a company from the Gulf. And I wanted to make that point because when the company has been that long with Alaska and maintained their institutional knowledge on the operations of that and escorting tankers out through Prince William Sound, to have a new company come in instantly and take over that is a concern to me. So, plus the jobs that we're going to lose. So mm-hmm. I'd like to hear their comments on that.
All right. Thanks for that call, Robert. Rachel, you looked into that a little bit?
Yeah, we've covered this. So, mm-hmm. What he's talking about is that Crowley Marine Services, which has provided the oil spill response and prevention services in Prince William Sound for decades now. So this is tankers coming to and from the end of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline that Alyeska announced this year that starting about 2 years from now, they'll be replaced by Edison Schuest, which is a Louisiana-based company. And there's a fight over that. Edison Schuest is a non-union company. Crowley is union. So a lot of the folks that currently work for Crowley are worried that they will not be able to transfer over to Edison Schuest. I think Crowley's about 40% of Crowley's current workforce are Alaska-based workers, and so there's a concern about whether they will be able to continue in those jobs. And Alyeska, to be fair, has said that it's not just about cost, that they renew these contracts all the time, and Edison Schuest put in the best bid. But there is a feeling, there's a concern that that this is part of the sort of tightening belts, that there was sort of a need to cut costs there, and that maybe that influenced that decision. So that's what he's talking about there.
Mm-hmm. Neil, did you want to add anything to that?
Or? No, Rachel nope. knows a lot more all about right. that than I do.
All right, let's go to another caller in Kodiak, Charles. Hi, Charles.
Good morning.
You have a quick question? We're running out of time.
Yes, I do. The number of 2,000 people have lost employment in the oil slope in Alaska recently. What percent of that 2,000 are Alaska residents, and what are the number or percent of out-of-staters?
All right. That was succinct. Neil, I think we covered some of this ground earlier, but...
Yeah, but I mean, that's a good question. It's been asked a number of times. We really don't know. That's very hard to tell at this point. Now, when we look backwards, we probably will get a better feel for that. But right now, we don't know if it's just proportionate, disproportionate. At this point, I can't answer that question.
You were an economist in the 80s.
I was.
When the last major recession hit the state, how different was that from what we're experiencing today?
There were some similarities and there were some really dramatic differences. And of course, we don't know yet because, we're still in, this recession is just sort of beginning. It's hard to compare the two, but there's some really dramatic differences. One is that we've already sort of alluded to is the housing market. I mean, we were booming in the 80s. I mean, it was one of our biggest economic booms ever. We basically had two within less than a decade. And, when you have a boom, there is a very good chance that, that might be accompanied by a bust. We have not been booming. We've been growing very, very much slower. We haven't been adding a whole lot of new inventory. We did not get ahead of ourselves like we did in the 1980s. So that's one huge difference. Another big difference is our demographics. In the 1980s, I think 3% of our population was over 65. Today, it's over 10%. Another big difference is the biggest group of people in the 1980s, they had gotten here fairly recently. They didn't have very deep roots. They were disproportionately baby boomers, young baby boomers, mm-hmm. who have now aged. And now we have as many millennials as we have baby boomers. So our population is much more evenly distributed. And therefore, most people believe our population is far more stable than it was in the 1980s. You know, so there's that difference. I mean, and you know, you can just go on and on. There's a lot of, you know, we're a bigger state. Our economy is somewhat more diverse. You know, we have a much broader service sector. You know, on the negative side, the biggest difference is in the 80s, our oil production was still climbing. And of course, that hasn't been true since 1988.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I hate to end on a really gloomy note. So, Rachel, let's get another clip of tape in here that you've got from your series from Alaska's Energy Desk. Someone who is talking that everything isn't all gloom and doom.
Yeah, so this is Tom Walsh. He runs a consulting company, and he's had to cut, maybe about half his staff, who are engineers, geologists, physicists. But he said, you know, if you've been in the industry a long time, you know that these times come and go, and he's pretty optimistic.
I think anybody who's been in the business for as long as I have, 36 years, you've been through a number of these, and. And this is, it has a great deal of similarity to past downturns in 86 and 2009 and others. But I think the difficulty that we're facing now is that the perception is that we don't have a bright future in the oil and gas industry in Alaska to look forward to. I'm very confident that things will turn around, and they already have started to turn around. And historically, you know, we have these depressed markets, and then we go back up again in price, and things are stable again.
Well, it's nice to hear kind of a optimistic outlook for what some folks who have been, and Tom Walsh, part of the series that you're producing, Rachel, you and the team are producing, has been in the oil industry for 36 years. So it's kind of a long tenure to give that perspective.
Yeah, he had sort of a more zen response to it, perhaps, than people who are going through their first downturn.
Absolutely. Well, remember that we are launching a series as the start of Alaska's Energy Desk gets underway, and Rachel Waldholtz is part of that team. We are starting that series today, and we'll be playing that this week. You can find more on our website, alaskapublic.org, on KTOO.org, and Alaska's Energy Desk is also on Facebook. So check out those videos. Thanks to my guests, Neil Fried, state economist, Rachel Waldholtz, who is part of Alaska's Energy Desk reporting team. Dave Waldron is our engineer, and Wesley Early and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for joining us.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. With a rich curriculum from art to advanced engineering, over 10,000 alumni strong, 90% of their students go on to four-year colleges or other post-secondary education. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.